on the programs. When it comes to section.
But I was going to ask you, is we haven't really had, what did you do during World War II? In terms of the types of positions you held and the kind of work you did?
Well, initially, in the early days, we got involved in synthetic rubber research.
At Carnegie,
yeah. But I turned over that. Harry Schultz and Stemple, organic chemist, and Fugassi took that over when I went on the Manhattan Project. I guess it was mid 42 or 43. I know I came back to Carnegie Tech in October of 45. But anyway, I told you Fred Seitz was there as head of physics and I was head of chemistry. When the heat was put on me to go, I went to make an appointment with Daugherty to ask for leave. I went over and waiting for the my appointment. Who comes out of Daugherty's office except Fred Seitz, who had just been in to ask for the same thing. So we left. We left for the project, and our offices were in Chicago. Mine was a peculiar organizational arrangement. The fellow who had put heat on me was Charlie Thomas of Monsanto. You know that name?
Yes.
He died just recently.
Right. His son is in California. And is attempting to get persuade one of my friends to write a biography of Charlie Thomas.
Charlie.
But anyway, Charlie Thomas was your boss then in Chicago.
On paper.
Yeah.
My title was really assist. Charlie was asked to be director of the Manhattan Project program on the chemistry, metallurgy, and purification of plutonium. And on paper, I was his assistant. Charlie was more and more running Monsanto Chemical. You know, he moved from Dayton to where he was head of, they had their central research department in Dayton, the old mm-hmm. Thomas Hochwald Laboratory.
Right.
And I've known Charlie quite well because we were associated in ACS business and all that kind of stuff. And somehow we just felt comfortable together. And Charlie was pretty good at understanding and getting along with university scientists. I guess I was pretty good at getting along with industrial people. But anyway, on this business of coordinating, really the job was coordinating all the research on chemistry, metallurgy, and purification of plutonium. I guess on paper, Charlie was the director. I was the assistant director, but I did all the work. Mm-hmm. Was the way it turned out. With Charlie, his demands on him from Monsanto were not, he became president, you know, and then chairman of the board and CEO. And Charlie liked the arrangement. He liked me doing the work. He trusted me and thought I had the right answers. What was the area anyway? Well, work on this chemistry, metallurgy, and purification of plutonium also involved some of the uranium chemistry and metallurgy, particularly. But the locations where work was going on and where I was mostly asked to coordinate. See, these guys, everybody wanted to do something spectacular. And then they'd get interesting leads, interesting sidelines that had nothing to do with the damn project at all, but just interesting chemistry, you see. So
these are mostly academic academic guys.
Well, Burton, Milton Burton, who later went to Notre Dame and headed a radiation laboratory there.
The Rad Lab, right.
Milton headed the radiation chemistry division in Chicago. Well, getting ahead of myself. The major work was the great group of Seaborg headed in Chicago on the chemistry. Work was also going on at Ames, Iowa, under Frank Spedding.
Mm-hmm. Spedding.
Yeah. And some work was going on at Oak Ridge, the Oak Ridge, what was called Clinton Laboratory then, where they had the pilot pile built, you know. It was supposed to give your usual pilot plane information for doing the Hanford job, designing it and building that plant, both the pile and the chemical separation process. So they were all anxiously waiting for the time to kick some of the slugs out of that X-10 pile at Oak Ridge so they can get hold of some plutonium, you see. Yeah. Well, the other places were, of course, Los Alamos and Berkeley. There was a good bit of work on it, going on at Berkeley. Most of Seaborg's people came to Chicago with him. I guess Seaborg would have preferred to have this whole thing in Berkeley, but the Manhattan Project didn't want that. He wanted to. Because a lot of the other work was already going on at Berkeley, like Fermi and Eugene Figner and mm-hmm. all those people.
No, Oppenheimer, I guess.
Oppenheimer, he was never there. He was at Berkeley, then at Los Alamos.
Mm-hmm.
Some work at other odds and end places. For example, one thing you had to have was some hell of a lot of work done on ceramics, that is, crucibles. It's awfully hard to get materials that won't contaminate uranium or plutonium if you reduce the salt in that ceramic, in that container. It has to be something that doesn't introduce impurities into it, because they're poison for neutrons. They capture neutrons, and you can't get a chain reaction going if you have too many of these damn poisons around, you know. So it was all that. We had information meetings once a month of the chemistry metallurgy people, and most of them were held in Chicago, because Seaborg's group was one of the largest groups in the bunch. And Seaborg's group were really doing the work, microchemical work, on the Hanford separation process. How are you going to purify the plutonium that mm-hmm. came out of these slugs, separated from the uranium, separated from the fission product? And that whole chemistry of plutonium was primarily worked out by Seaborg's group in Chicago. Of course, then they were so eager to get the damn plutonium and get the Hanford piles built, they couldn't wait. They really couldn't wait for the pilot pile down at Oak Ridge to kick out some slugs to give them plutonium. They said, we can't wait that long to design this plant and start building it, and start building the piles. So they got the whole chemical separation plant at Hanford was designed and built on a basis of the chemical information that Seaborg's crowd got on a microgram or scale.
And nothing.
It's a damnedest step up known in history. No industry would take that chance by a long shot.
Yeah.
Imagine the millions of dollars invested in the chemical. This is remote control.
Had they failed, the time to retool.
It was one of the biggest risk-taking things that I think in history.
Yeah.
And the damn thing worked. Yeah. That was one of the miracles of the thing. The damn thing worked. That's great. Credit to Seaborg and his crowd. They did the work.
Who worked with Seaborg along with Seaborg on that project? Do you remember some of the other people who were working there in Chicago?
Oh yes, a lot of I knew most all of them.
Mm-hmm.
On the chemistry division. Of course, Farrington Daniels was down there for a time.
Who?
Farrington Daniels was down there for a time. Trying to think of the section heads under Seaborg. I'm trying to think of. Of the division heads. Truman Coleman was one of them. I brought him to Carnegie Tech. He's still there. I guess he retires this year. A chap by the name of Nathan, to tell his name, headed a section in a micro scale. Actually made some plutonium metal. He went to Caltech. He's at Caltech now. What's his name? It starts with N. I'm trying to think of the section chiefs. I should know his name very well. Was with Seaborg at Berkeley, came to Chicago, and after the war went back to Berkeley and has made a good reputation. I think he's become a member of the Academy. It's sort of a, I think it's a Jewish name. Well, I haven't done a very good job on Seaborg's lieutenants. I knew them all at the time. At these information meetings, these people from these different locations came together, particularly the chiefs at these different places.
So not only the Chicago group, but also from Hanford,
from
Ames,
Iowa, from Berkeley, from Oak Ridge. We even had a project on this refractory thing at MIT under Norton, who was professor of ceramics.
Oh,
Now, outside of Seaborg's group, there were these other sections or divisions, I've forgotten which they were called. One of them was this radiation chemistry, the effect of radiation on materials. Not was headed by Milton Burton.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a section on radiochemistry that was headed by, he's been, I don't know whether he's dead by this time or not. I haven't heard anything about him for a while, but he went first to Oak Ridge, and then he went to MIT on the faculty. What the devil was his name? And there was a...
Manson Benedict.
Huh?
Benedict?
No. Manson... Manson wasn't involved in our plutonium project. He was on the uranium project, wasn't he? On the other side.
He may have been. I don't know that much about
Columbia. They were at Oak Ridge also, but they developed the diffusion process and the... separation. I think Manson was in that crowd, which was headquartered at Columbia, I think, at that time. We weren't supposed to exchange information any more than necessary between the plutonium project and the uranium U-235 project, you know.
But you didn't really do any laboratory work then. You
no, were I did. My job was to keep them from duplicating work.
Right, and really to
kind of... And to see that the work went on. For example, Milton Burton found out that under high radiation, benzene would polymerize. Ah, he thought that was such an interesting chemistry problem. He wanted to devote a lot of his effort, his section's effort, to studying the higher energy radiation causing polymerization. Well, I had to go to Milton and say, Milton, damn it, you save that problem until after the war when you're a professor. What you're supposed to do is to tell us whether those Hanford piles will crumble or will stand up.
So you really had to ride herd on all these
people. I had to ride herd, yeah. Seaborg knew what the score was. Yeah. He never had to. He saw that his crowd were all going in the right direction. But then when it came to things like refractories, we had work going on at Berkeley, at Ames, Iowa, and at MIT. And you had to keep hammering that they should take different classes of materials, not all try to work on crystalline MgO or something like that.
What you were trying to do is make sure that the thing would work at the
end.
That's
right, yeah.
Very interesting.
DuPont was, of course, handling, had the contract on building Hanford and the separation process both. And I had to handle problems like, became president of DuPont. Guy that takes such wonderful movies of hummingbirds. What's his name? A member of the Academy. Well, he and I had to figure out how to, in what form, plutonium as a salt should be sent to Los Alamos from Hanford, and the design of the vessels and all that kind of stuff. Those things I had to help decide, and I had to write the agenda for these monthly meetings also, and write the report of the meeting.
But really, your plant experience, that practical experience you got way back when, came to a great deal of
things went unbelievably smoothly, really. I had more trouble keeping... Well, I expect Frank Spedding and his group at Ames, Iowa caused me more headaches than any other group. Frank would have liked to have duplicated everything that Glenn Seaborg was doing, you see. And they had done a marvelous job on the production of pure uranium, better than any of the industrial people that were trying to do it, like Westinghouse, you know, at that time. The damn professors at Iowa State under Spedding, made all of the pure uranium to get that first chain reaction going under the stands in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they kept up until Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I think it... Essentially, all of the uranium that was used to make 235 was produced by those damn professors at Iowa State in temporary buildings. But then he wanted to get into plutonium chemistry and metallurgy. You know, the metallurgy of plutonium went almost entirely to Los Alamos. Then you got to the place where you're dealing with quantities where you had to have remote control on everything, and the two men at Los Alamos that were primarily responsible for the work there were Joe Kennedy, who was a graduate student with Seaborg and involved in the Seaborg-McBone discovery of plutonium, And Cyril Smith. I don't know that name means anything to you.
Chicago University.
Well, Chicago Institute of Metals. He went to MIT, however.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cyril Stanley Smith, I guess.
That's Cyril name. Stanley Smith. Britisher. One of my jobs was to educate him on the project when he was brought on. Mm-hmm. He didn't know a damn thing about, you know. And that was one of my jobs. He was on his, can't stop in Chicago on his way to Los Alamos to take up his appointment there, heading a metallurgy division at Los Alamos. Two or three days for me to educate him on the project.
And you did a lot of traveling then during those three years or so, crisscrossing the country and back and forth to the East Coast.
Well, these monthly meetings were taken to Los Alamos and Oak Ridge and to Ames every once in a while, maybe once or twice a year, go to those places.
Were you all pretty well kept informed of what the Germans were doing? Did you have a sense of the urgency of what was
taking place? I think we were oversold on it myself now. The original evidence of them, they were, no question what they were interested at first, because and the evidence was largely their great interest in the heavy water from the electrolytic cells in Norway. That's one reason I went into Norway. They were using heavy water as a moderator in their piles, or wanted to, but it never got very far. Hitler got very much enamored with the idea of the rockets on Britain before this went very far.
V2s,
yeah. That's right. And so their scientists were pretty much diverted into the rocket business. And I don't think we were, I think that our intelligence probably knew that there had been a shift in that, but I think they still kept saying their old story so that no one would throw the monkey wrench in the plutonium and, well, the Manhattan Project.
Yeah.
A lot of millions were going into it, you know.
What do you think of all the 3 years you were in the Manhattan Project, did you take a lot, get a lot of experience from it that you used later on when you became administrator and president of Carnegie Mellon?
Oh, I got a lot of administrative experience, God knows, yeah. And some of them were tough problems to handle, but I learned to not put off a problem. As soon as you know it, dig into it, get it over with. You try to sweep it under the rug, it just get worse.
And probably also just handling a lot of different kinds of people.
That's right. Oh, God, everyone from Teller, Eugene Wigner, what's his name at Cornell?
Dubai or no?
Huh?
No, Dubai was on the...
No, Dubai wasn't.
Rubber Project.
Involved, but it was a theoretical physicist. He's a fine guy. But awfully hard to understand. He has a hell of an accent. Old Szilard in Chicago.
Yes.
Szilard. I don't know. Eugene Wigner is a dear man. He's a kind, thoughtful, extremely able. Theoretical physicist. He's one of the kind of people you would like to be like, because he can take a problem and by doing just reasoning mentally and you might say mental calculations and so on, can come up with an answer at right order of magnitude of what the result would be. He's a remarkable fellow. And such a gentle soul. He wouldn't hurt a mouse, I don't think. He's a dear friend once you know him. Dear friend. Married a physicist, was a professor at Wellesley, I think. Mary Wigner, she's a very dear person too, and made a wonderful wife for Eugene.
Did you know Vannevar Bush during this period?
I've met him a few times. He wasn't much involved
with what you were doing.
He was chairman of the chief advisors to the president. Mm-hmm. I think he would be the guy that would have to take General
Groves, or
General Groves, to the woodshed, if anybody took him to the woodshed. Yeah.
Well, can you remember what you felt after your general impressions that you had after the bombs went off? Did you have a different sense of the potentials of science, or?
For
some people it was quite a change. They really changed afterwards in the way they viewed science.
Well, the most of the good scientists on the project that I knew, take people like Figner and Seitz and I don't think it's true of Teller, but I think even Seaborg and Ed McMillan and even people like Cyril Smith and Joe Kennedy, people with important positions in this, as well as on the uranium project, the ones I knew, there were an awful lot of them were strongly advocating that we not drop the bombs on Japan. The great majority of those people were urging that we invite the Japanese to a demonstration. If they don't come to the demonstration, or if they don't surrender when they see the demonstration, then go ahead and use them. Now that was a very general view of a great many of the scientists. And I remember that right after they had been used, my brother, after they had been used, and I guess maybe after the Japanese had surrendered, I thought, gee, it's now I can go home. By that time, Monsanto had taken over from the University of Chicago the Oak Ridge contract, and Charlie Thomas pleaded with me to stay, come to St. Louis, and act as liaison between the Monsanto brass and the Oak Ridge brass, at least for a few months to get the thing going. So I did that from about May. When was Nagasaki and Hiroshima? What were the dates, the months of the year?
August.
Was it August?
I think July and August.
July, must
1945,
have been
July. The two.
Must have been July, probably.
VJ Day was September. Wasn't September? September of 45?
Well, that came after the Japanese surrender.
Right. VJ Day was the day they signed a document there on under Missouri. I think they dropped it in July.
Right after that, Charlie was up at Chicago, one of his rather infrequent visits up there. And I remember we had, Charlie had a suite out in a Park Plaza or something like that, around the edge of that big park in St. Louis, and he had invited me to have dinner with him, come to St. Louis and have dinner with him. That's when he put the B on me about this contract. So, of course, then the news came out. Everybody knew it before we went to dinner that night. So we celebrated. We had, all the people that knew anything about it got together that evening, got a little high, I guess, and had dinner. And then Charlie put the heat on me for this job. They provided me with two motor Cessna airplane to shuttle back and forth between Oak Ridge and St. Louis. And I lived in Missouri Athletic Club, had an air-conditioned office right next to Charlie's out of Monsanto headquarters, and spent my time between St. Louis and Oak Ridge.
That sounds like a tough job in many ways, commuting back and forth like that.
Well, my family wasn't out to St. Louis at all. Well, and by October, this had settled down, and they were satisfied that we had straightened out administrative matters between Monsanto brass and the Oak Ridge brass, so that I was able to go back to Carnegie Tech in October, because then I hadn't more than started this till Daugherty was on my back about getting back. And this was going to be, he gave me a nice boost in salary over what I'd had before I left on leave, and wanted me to be, had definitely created the job of Dean of Graduate Studies. Mm-hmm. So I became Dean of Graduate Studies as well as head of the chemistry department.
And you did both for about four years or so,
yeah.
I guess.
Between then, 45, and the time I became president. And
did you continue to take graduate students then when you came back?
Yes. That's when I did all this epoxy work. And the true acid base level of solvents, it's not an easy concept. Larry Hammett has come about as close to being helpful in that as anybody. But we did got some striking results in epoxy formation between the true acid base level of the solvent and the rate.